said about that. Greetings in Jesus' name this evening. Count it a blessing to be here again tonight. If you haven't been here the other evenings or haven't listened to the recordings, I'm sorry, but I won't be able to fill you in on everything, so there might be some things that won't completely make sense. They are recorded. You can go back and listen to them. But I think most of us have been here, and thank you for coming back. Let's stand and say together Psalm 89, verse 15. Blessed is the people that know the joyful sound. They shall walk, O Lord, in the light of thy countenance. Very good. Let's say it one more time. Blessed is the people that know the joyful sound. They shall walk, O Lord, in the light of thy countenance. Thank you very much. You may be seated. Well, I want to talk about good music this evening. And I'm sorry that we're going to spend so little time on that. You would think that we should spend more time on that, but I'll just excuse myself by saying I don't feel overly obligated because I've spent the last 15 years trying to do that, okay? And I think what I have to show you is not going to be anything new on that front tonight. You probably very well expect much of what I have to say. And what we've been doing in choir reflects music as I see most fitting. And I would also say that I'm very grateful when I think of our singing culture we have here. I'm very grateful to much more than just choir. The Oberholzer family has blessed us with their ideals in music for many years, and others as well. And that has been a tremendous blessing. And I made the comment to my wife. I didn't say anything to Clinton about this, so he's going to have to tell me if I'm wrong. But I made the comment to my wife that I'm just teaching what Clinton Oberholzer has believed all along. There's no surprises. So he's nodding his head. That's a tremendous blessing to me. And many other of the rest of you have reflected similar values in the area of music, and I'm very grateful for that. Well, before we move into godly, good, healthy music, I just want to revisit some of what we've been talking about and try to clear some things up that may be confusing. We've been talking about the sound of traditional music versus the sound of pop or popular music. I've talked about the inspiration factor. I've hinted to it. That's just simply the term I'm using for the way that we are influenced. Every musician, everybody out there creating music is influenced and is being impacted by a particular style or genre or another artist or something. None of us are entirely original. Man's creativity is always inspired by something or someone. That is why we can categorize music into genres to begin with. We kind of follow those trends, those influences, and categorize into, you know, whether it be rock or country or bluegrass or classical or you name whatever we're trying to categorize. And so I make no apology for using specific style, genre names. Because I think if, unless we do, it's very difficult. I think it gets more confusing if we try to analyze music without discussing the great, what I see as distinct differences. Yes, I know there's mixing. I know there's some confusing areas, but this really is not a confusing picture to me. And I hope as time goes on, all of us will see that more. So in the last session, we really kind of doubled down on central vocal techniques of sliding, scooping, flipping the voice, and all those kinds of things. And I would just like to say that I believe, as I see it, is as much a defining characteristic of this side of the board as polyrhythms are. You can, you're free to disagree with that, but that's what I've, the conclusion I've come to on that, and that they're correlated. So, just to refresh, what I'm talking about by those vocal techniques, I can sing the song, My Jesus, I Love Thee, two ways. I can sing, My Jesus, I love thee, I know thou art mine. Or I can sing, My Jesus, I love thee, I know thou art mine. Okay? And of course, there's a lot of people out there that could do a whole lot better than that. Does that make sense? All right, so this brings up questions that I get asked very often and have been being asked as we've gone through this. And I want to address these questions. So, traditional classical music that I've been promoting as healthier music uses slurs, right? A lot of slurs. Think a song like Angels We Have Heard on High. The chorus goes, Gloria in excelsis Deo. One big long bunch of slur, okay? Because we're sustaining the same syllable over multiple notes. So the question is, what's the difference between the sliding and scooping in the pop technique versus the slurs in classical? What is the difference? And then, what makes the pop techniques wrong and what makes the classical technique right? Well, I want to give two things to those questions. Number one is the difference is a stylistic difference. And because it is a stylistic difference, it has to be stylistically discerned. And I'll explain that. Secondly, the pop style is improvisational, and we'll get to that as well. So, stylistic difference, what do I mean? Suppose that you wanted a canvas painting to hang on your living room wall, and you decided that you would like to have a painting, or a what would look like a painting, of the Last Supper. Jesus sitting with his disciples at the Last Supper. And so you would go online or whatever and shop for a canvas painting of the Last Supper. Well, of course, some of you are probably already thinking of that. You won't be able to avoid the fact that Leonardo da Vinci, a long, long time ago, made one of the most famous works of art, the Last Supper. And so you would have the option of getting, not the original, of course, but you would have the option of getting something that would try to copy that really closely. You would have that option. And may I suggest that that would be like choosing an original classical piece of music, maybe one of our older traditional hymns, okay, in our hymn book. I'm making a comparison to music as we go along here. Or you would also have options, there's lots of them, of canvases, paintings, that would clearly be a picture of the Last Supper with Jesus and his disciples, but they would clearly be someone else's idea. No real influence of Leonardo da Vinci at all, okay? And that would be like choosing maybe a song that is has the same words, the same message, lyrically, but has a totally different tune. It may also be totally different in style. We'll get to that with the next one here. So suppose you would also have the option of, and there's many, many, many renditions of the Last Supper that reflect Leonardo da Vinci's original idea. The basic sketch, Jesus in the center of the table, all the disciples as he laid them out, maybe even in the same postures, but painted in a totally different painting style. It might be impressionistic, it might be minimalistic, it might be, and the list goes on and on and on of art styles, okay? It would look radically different. In fact, you may not even recognize it as having anything to do with Leonardo da Vinci's original painting, but it does. That would be like singing a song with the same lyrics, but singing it with a totally different style. Does that make any sense? What I'm trying to get at is that, and if I had time, I would have maybe ordered two paintings or something to actually illustrate that, where you could actually see, like, obviously, it's a very different painting, but it looks completely different. It looks completely different, but we could soon see that the basic sketch is Leonardo's original. So, a stylistic difference must be stylistically discerned. So suppose that I had these two paintings here, and they look very different, but we soon realize that underneath they're the same. And then we ask the question, well, what's the difference between these two paintings? We could all see there's a difference, we could all agree there's a difference, but what's actually different? Well, I, as someone who knows almost nothing about painting, which is a shame because my mother's a painter, I wouldn't have much to say. I'd be like, I don't know, it looks like this guy just dabbed the paint on, this fella did struck, but I can guess, but I really don't know. But if we get my mother or someone else who knows much more about painting, they would be able to explain much more in depth what is actually different in the painting styles. Take that another step farther. Take someone who's very knowledgeable on art, and they would be able to tell you perhaps the style of art, give it a name, and pin it on a specific era of time, and what the thought, what the ideas that created that art style to begin with, what some of the underlying ideas are that are within that artwork. Am I making any sense? Art styles express the values and ways of thinking in a culture. And here's something else I want you to get. Art will have meaning that cannot be fully explained. Things that cannot be put into words are communicated in style of art, and especially in music. Even by the artists themselves. Artists themselves cannot fully explain what is put into their music, because it's more than what words can even tell. So how do we discern style? Can style alone be morally wrong? Now to the question, well, what really is wrong with the pop vocal style? Or the rhythmic style? If I can just give another painting illustration. Suppose we wanted to put a large sign out front here at the church, or maybe we wanted to put it right on the front of the church here, facing the driveway. A large sign, and we wanted the message, the words, to be Jesus saves. But we don't want to just put a plain sign with plain words. We want to have some creativity. We want to make it artistically appealing. So we go and we ask a couple artists to give us some models of what they would do for us, okay? I'm just making this up, all right? And these different artists would reflect different styles, which we're not going to get too carried away with. But let's just suppose one of those artists is a graffiti artist. I know we wouldn't do that, all right? But let's just suppose. And he offers us what he could write or how he could artistically portray the words Jesus saves. And we would all look at it, and I'm pretty sure we would all unanimously agree that that one's not the one to be chosen, okay? I would certainly hope so. So you all in your minds can imagine what that might look like, okay? We're talking about some words and maybe a bit of artistic character. And of course, the font itself being artistic. So let's just say that in brothers' meeting, I, being the contrarian I can be sometimes, said, no, I like that. That's the one I want. And by the way, tell me what's wrong with it. What would you say? Give me some ideas what you might say is wrong with your imaginary graffiti, Jesus saves.
He has a wrong idea about Jesus.
Yeah, but why? It just says Jesus saves. Jesus saves, I mean, I hope you believe he saves.
The culture it represents does not align with our culture.
The culture it represents does not align. Okay. All right, anything else?
Lack of sincerity.
Lack of sincerity? How do we know that? What do you mean? It says Jesus saves. Do you sincerely believe that, Derek? Whether it's written in graffiti or whether it's written in something else. Oh, sorry, I'm missing one. Just, yeah.
I think the spirit of the artist, his heart, he expresses his heart by his picture, okay, or, mm-hmm. or his design or whatever it is. And you want someone that has a heart that is saved, that say Jesus saves. So you want a man that wants to express his salvation or is grateful for his salvation, the right spirit, and the one has a wrong spirit.
There's a lot of saved graffiti artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, Bill.
Because when you read it, your mind goes somewhere
else. Your mind goes somewhere else. Why would that be, Bill? You're thinking you'd like to get through there.
Why would somebody do that?
Yeah.
But, you know,
good.
Your mind, it plays with your mind.
Yep.
And your mind goes somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Any others before we try to tie this together? So Daniel and Bill, if we take what they said, and the rest of what you said was good too, okay? All right. None of you said anything that was wrong. But what Daniel said and what Bill said, can we say that the problem is association? Okay, the problem is association. So, I believe, and I think you all believe, that we could make a compelling argument that there's something wrong with that artistic style based purely on the association of it, the culture it comes from. But, and let me say this, I have attempted to make a strong case that based on association, okay, based on association, that there's a problem with the vocal techniques I was illustrating in the last session. Okay? But let's go a little further, a little deeper than that. In that graffiti art, Jesus Saves, I would suggest that there's deeper meaning that is expressed in the artistic style itself. Okay? We can't get away from the association, but that there's things actually expressed in how the art style works that reflects that culture it comes from. You would agree with that, right? And you might say, well, of course, because some of the symbols and things that are used in graffiti are actually satanic. I'm not even talking about that. Okay? Let's just stick with a plain font style, Jesus Saves. I'm suggesting that there's deeper meanings that even the artist himself may not be able to explain embedded in that artistic style. So, at a deeper level in music, in the music style, specifically the vocal style, okay, I keep hammering on that one, that I was explaining to you last time, I'm suggesting that the improvisational aspect of popular music, the kind of licking it up, taking the freedom to put in whatever musical licks I want to put in there on the go, that aspect of pop is at least part of the deeper meaning that is, in my mind, equated with loose morals. Okay? Am I being fair? You have to decide. I have hinted at this and perhaps haven't made a big enough deal about this, I don't know. But there is a lot of sexual ideas within popular music. And they come out in the rhythm, because remember when we started that Sunday, we gave the first session, we talked about how the rhythms can actually induce hormones, sexual hormones, gonadotrophins, okay? Sexual arousal hormones. Going on then, so rhythms would increase sexual awareness, but then when in vocals, we talked about sensual, I usually refer to sensual vocal and instrumental techniques, but sometimes it's beyond just sensual. Sometimes those sounds that are just right into the microphone are, and again, my thoughts, downright sexual. Okay. And then we go into CCM, and on down through and copy these things. And I realize that till we get to the last clip I played last Wednesday night, okay, we went a long ways, I know. But I'm just simply saying, isn't this where it kind of comes from, okay? I don't know if that helps us understand at all or not. So we can take the slur, or I can change the style, Gloria in Excelsis Deo. Okay. All right, character of godly music. If God, I said this when we began this the very first day, if God is the source of our music, then our music must reflect His character. And His character, just some of His attributes: holiness, purity, righteousness, justice, order. And we could spend a lot of time on all those thinking about music. I'd like you to turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 5. We have in 2 Chronicles chapter 5 the dedication of Solomon's temple. And we'll just look at this scene and we will draw a few thoughts from it. Excuse me. 2 Chronicles chapter 5, I'll start reading at verse 11. And it came to pass, when the priests were come out of the holy place, for all the priests that were present were sanctified, and did not then wait by course, also the Levites, which were the singers, all of them of Asaph, of Heman, of Jeduthun, with their sons and their brethren, being arrayed in white linen, having cymbals and psalteries and harps, stood at the east end of the altar, and with them 120 priests, sounding with trumpets. It came even to pass, as the trumpeters and the singers were as one to make one sound to be heard in praise and thanksgiving to the Lord, and when they lifted up their voice with the trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praised the Lord, saying, "For He is good, for His mercy endureth forever," that then the house was filled with a cloud, even the house of the Lord, so that the priests could not stand to minister by reason of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord had filled the house of God. Characteristics of godly music. The first one I would draw out is unity and order. Now, it doesn't say it here, but Josephus, the Jewish historian, says that there may have been up to 200,000 singers, plus 4,000 instrumentalists, and of course, the 120 trumpeters. That's, if he's correct, that's a big crowd. Whatever the case is, just the fact that it says 120 priests sounding with trumpets, that alone should tell you that, you wouldn't make the biggest crowd be the trumpets, okay? That's kind of pointless then to have anybody else, all right? So this was a big crowd, nevertheless. And they all were making one sound of praise and thanksgiving. One sound. What all does that exactly mean? Was it all in unison? I doubt it was all unison. Maybe that's part of this one sound. I tend to think that that means that it was ordered. They were together. They were blended together in the song and in the music they were producing. How did they do it? Did they have sheet music? I doubt it. Did they have a director? Well, probably. If we go to 2 Chronicles, you don't have to. I'm sorry, 1 Chronicles chapter 15, we find David with, again, this, I believe it's the sons of Asaph. And it says there in 1 Chronicles 15, verse 22, it says, "And Chenaniah, chief of the Levites, was for song. He instructed about the song because he was skillful." So they had a director of sorts. Now, I don't know how he did that. Was he just one of the instrumentalists and he gave input on how we're going to do this together? I don't know. But whatever the case was, This man was bringing order to the music. That's really my point. He was instructing about the song. So I believe there should be order in our music. That is in contrast to, what's the word I keep using? Improvisation. Thank you. Sheldon Yoder tells the story. He's a Mennonite man that does quite a bit of teaching on music as well. I appreciate his teaching. He tells this story that when he was younger, he enjoyed Southern gospel. And he thought, as growing up as a boy, he thought it would just be great if all these gospel quartet singing men that he just loved so much, all these different groups, you know, the Cathedrals, the Imperials, and all these, would just get together someday and have a choir and really make a gospel sound. He thought that would just be fantastic. Well, one day it happened. And he says it sounded terrible. Even though he appreciated that kind of music, he said it was awful. What was the problem? Well, when you're singing in a quartet, I mean, bass, you can drum up whatever you want to drum up, and it's great. Tenors, you can scream all you want, and it's great. But when you get in a choir, it's not so great anymore because you're all yelling something different. That's not order. Order is something we can do with a small group. We can do it with a quartet. Absolutely, we can. But we can also do the same thing with a large group. It would sound different, of course, but it would be unified. And may I suggest that that can be something to think about as you analyze smaller groups. Is what they're doing going to work even with a bigger group? Godly music is unified. It brings us together in unity, collective unity. A quote from Music and the Mind by Anthony Storr says, "Music brings about similar physical responses in different people at the same time. It is able to draw groups together and create a sense of unity. Music has the effect of intensifying or underlining the emotion which a particular event calls forth by simultaneously coordinating the emotions of a group of people." Now, that's not just true of good music. That's true of bad music, too. But I'm just simply pointing out that when we come here on Sunday morning and we sing together, there is a unifying effect that happens. It brings us together. And the more unified we are in our singing, and I realize that we're all at very different places. And by the way, that doesn't bother me at all. If I sit beside you in church and you're one that struggles to sing, that's completely fine, okay? Do your best, and that's wonderful. But what I am saying is that it brings the good, healthy music, the emotions that are reflected in this music bring us together. We already looked at the song, the last song we sang there, and how the music so fittingly climaxes with the words, okay? Think about that on a Sunday morning as we sing song after song after song, how the music is not only appropriately, it appropriately reflects the text. Personal unity. We wouldn't usually use the word unity. We might use the word integrity or something like that for this, but what I'm talking about is we expect that as Christians, we come here on Sunday morning and we'll just use our attire, for example. all of us, men and women, we dress appropriately and we come to church. And you women are dressed in modestly made dresses. If I show up at your house during the week, I would be shocked to see you in something radically different, like shorts. Okay? I would not expect that. So, basically what I'm saying is what we do door in at church on Sunday, what's appropriate, should inform the rest of our week, right? So if I meet you at work, men, I don't expect to see you in a sleeveless shirt, right? We don't really expect that, right? Because there should be a consistency. Well, there should be a consistency. This is the music, for good reason, the hymn book we have, the kind of music that's there. I really believe there should be some kind of consistency. And I'm suggesting that that consistency is found in this by categorizing it like this. Let's see, I'm losing my spot here. Why is it we can walk out of church doors and get into our cars and turn on something that is radically different, or at least reflects elements of something that is totally different than the music we promote in church? All right. Second, and may I also insert there that there is other music besides choral music that's good music. You might be able to have a small group singing, or you might be able to have an instrumental piece or whatever. But I'll just throw it out there that if we take our hymn book as we sing Sunday morning and if we just took our Sunday morning worship service and we rehearsed the song we were singing a bit, what do we have? Or maybe just take it the way it is. What kind of music do we have? It's a choir singing, okay? And so I would say that a lot of the music that best reflects our church music is, a lot of it is choral in nature. It's not the only thing, okay? But a lot of it is. Of course, not all choral music reflects it. All right, second characteristic is praise and thanksgiving. In Hebrews 13, 15, and 16, it says, "By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But to do good and to communicate, forget not. For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased." Our music should have should reflect our praise and thanksgiving to our Almighty Creator. Third characteristic is power. It was when the singing and music was lifted up in unity together as one sound in praise and thanksgiving that the house was filled with a cloud. There's power in music. 2 Chronicles 20:20-22, you know the story, how Jehoshaphat was fighting the Moabites, or went out to fight the Moabites, and they put the singers in the front, and they went out, and how they slaughtered each other, that the Lord fought the battle for them. Music has that kind of power. Music is moving. Sometimes we get the idea that good music is music that doesn't feel anything. Music, there's no point in music if there's not some kind of emotion being brought forth. So music should move us, okay? It just needs to move us the right way, okay? All right. We're just going to play some music, and like I said, I think I'm pretty well known with this, so I don't think this is anything new. This just reflects a lot of like what we sing in choir. Some of these are even the same songs. But I just want to go across it and just think a little bit of how this kind of music with an emphasis on unity, being together, being excellent, how that is appropriate. I played this one last time. I'll just play it again. Think about, again, the solo voice. We heard a lot of solo voice last time. We have a solo voice. He doesn't have the butt mic on his, right on his mouth. You don't hear slurring and scooping. Yes, he has a vibrato, but that's something that's shared on both sides of the board. That's not, but we don't have that scooping, and he has a very projected voice. You could be in the farthest corner of the building and hear this man singing. We also played this clip before. I'll just play it again. It reflects the Renaissance style, which is very, very, very old. This kind of music takes tremendous working together. It can't just happen. You can't improvise. You cannot get away with it. If you love me, keep my commandments, and I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another comforter. Now, I will admit that the music I'm playing here tonight, much of it, you probably will have a hard time hearing the words. There could be numerous reasons for that. But doesn't it make a little bit of sense that when we're, especially soloists, on this side of the board, have their mics right on their mouth, that it would be easier to understand the words? I'm not making excuse for being sloppy in diction in our singing at all, okay? But the truth is, us here singing on a Sunday morning a hymn to someone who does not know the song we're singing, it would be much harder to hear the words than almost all pop singers. They all know how to make the words come through really clear through that mic they're using. Part of it is, a lot of times we have a lot more people singing. Not just one. It takes a lot more work to bring those consonants and everything together. And the nature of singing tends to bring the ending consonant of one word to the beginning consonant of the next word and merge them into one, okay? And that joining sometimes produces something that's not very discernible, okay? A soloist, it's much easier for them to separate those consonants and do all kinds of things so that you still understand. But when we have a group of people doing that, there's still ways to do it, but it takes a lot of hard work. And there's all kinds of techniques. There's a lot of effort put into trying to help choirs to sing in a way that can be heard, understood. Here is a song, and I picked this one because it reflects a much more modern style. This is a composed just a few years ago. We sang it in choir as well. It's composed by a Mennonite man here in this local area, but his style reflects a modern style of classical music, still staying true, not borrowing the things that I was talking about over here. Granted, that's a little different harmony than what we have in a lot of our songs in the hymn book that are much older. But it's still very appropriate, right? It's beautiful. The singing, especially, is appropriate. Now, I know I'm not here promoting that we should or shouldn't listen to instrumental music, but I think most of us would listen to some, or at least allow our young people to listen to music that has instruments, so I think it's something we should give direction to. So here's some piano with choir. Cleanse the thoughts of our hearts by the inspiration of thy Holy Spirit, that we may more perfectly love thee. Isn't that beautiful lyrics? We haven't been talking about lyrics a lot, but cleanse the thoughts of our hearts by the inspiration of thy Holy Spirit. Why? So that we may more perfectly love thee in our everyday life, through everything I do, that it would be more like Jesus. Does the music, does the body language of the music, is it appropriate to the text? Is that piano playing appropriate to those words? Is the singing appropriate? Is the harmony? Is the melody? Is it appropriate? Yeah. It is. It's beautiful. I have always, as traditional and as normal as it is, for some reason, I always get goosebumps at the ending of Lloyd Kaufman's arrangement of Spirit of God, descend upon our heart. And I'm sorry, I don't have everything clipped the way I would like it here, so bear with me. (Clears throat) been talking about getting possessed by the Spirit. This is the kind of music that should be moving us. Find that so moving. It doesn't move me to wipe out on the floor and go unconscious or anything like that, but I find it so deeply moving. And I find myself sitting in my car, or whether I'm at, which, by the way, I don't listen to music much anymore, but when I do hear this song, I just, wherever I am, maybe we're sitting here in a wedding, I just find myself feeling like, yes, Spirit of God, descend upon my heart. That's what I want. The music and the words are unified. Well, here's something other than a choir. Here's a smaller group. Five, maybe six people singing a familiar song you know. Smaller group, it's easier to understand the words.
Jesus bids us shine with a
appropriate. Here is a more choral, more artistic piece, and if you don't appreciate it, that's okay. I hope you appreciate some of the other things I've played. But I'll play this one, or at least a part of it. It's from a larger work called The Peaceable Kingdom, composed by Randall Thompson. And this piece always moves me. Again, I hardly ever have time to listen to it. But if I hear it, the song, the words are taken from different Bible verses. But ye shall have a song as in the night, as when an holy solemnity is kept. And then later on, it has the words, I'm missing some words in there, but, and gladness of heart. There's going to be gladness of heart and gladness of heart. And it repeats it over and over again. And I know a lot of times we talk about how repetition is a problem in pop music. Repetition doesn't have to be a problem if it's done appropriately, if it builds with a message, with an appropriate lyrical context. Ye shall have a song. A song. As in the night when a holy solemnity is kept. Song and gladness of heart. And then we take the time to build some feeling into and gladness of heart. And we get this variation that brings just more and more feeling. There can be climaxes in good music. And gladness of heart. As when one goeth with a pipe. To come into the mountain of the Lord. And then back to and gladness of heart, more subdued. There's no way this little thing I have up here can do any bit of justice to that. Most of the music over here, with a bunch of polyrhythm, it wakes up like it just, like what it was, what it was meant to do. All right. I have one more song here that I'll just play. And the words, you know them. It's a different tune you won't recognize, but it's, "And can it be that I should gain an interest in the Savior's blood? Died he for me who caused his pain." The idea. I'll just jump ahead and just hear how this music has built to the phrase, "Bold I approach the eternal throne." I won't drag this out any longer because I think you all weren't surprised. Now, I realize that some of us, especially maybe some of us older ones, were raised, we didn't know any better, around gospel music, whatever, and hearing some of these kinds of things, it's maybe not instantly enjoyable to you, and that's understandable. And you know what? You don't have to like any one of these pieces I just played. There is good options that I'm sure you can find enjoyable that are very appropriate. Brother Aaron Hurst and Earl Fox have worked together for years down there in the studio which unfortunately discontinued this, but with the Altar of Praise Chorale. And they've produced, I don't know how many recordings. Does anybody know how many recordings it is? It's, over the years, it's quite a few. It was an annual thing there for a while. There's quite a few, maybe at least 10 or 15, I'm not sure, recordings from Altar Praise Chorale over the years, where they've taken hymns. There's a few choral pieces mixed in, but for the most part, they've taken hymns. A lot of them would be found in our songbook, and they simply sing them very similar to what we would do in church with a little bit of adjustment here and there, and they do it very well. Very, very excellently done, and very palatable if to, I think, anyone who can appreciate what we do here in church. If you can't appreciate it, then I think you should maybe ask yourself, well, do we appreciate what we do here at church? But if you do appreciate what we do here at church, I think you can appreciate that. And there's others like it, or similar. Oasis Chorale has made, I think, 3 or 4 recordings so far of hymns out of the hymns of the church. And they're singing hymns right out of the hymn book. Very, very nicely done. So you might ask, well, what about classical musicians using elements of pop in their music? The vocal things I talked about, and maybe even the rhythms. So this happens a lot with our Mennonite choirs. And I've been a part of this. And there was even a time where I thought this should be a part of choir. I even kind of felt that way when we started the choir here 15 years ago. And so we do arrangements of spirituals that have a good bit of rhythm and maybe even layering of the syncopated rhythms. And, bring in a lot of scooping, slurring sounds. Or maybe in solos, like the last clip I played to you, If I Can Help Somebody, last Wednesday night. What about that? Well, first of all, I'll just put it this way. I can't defend that. Because what seems to be happening, in my mind, is we leave what is solid here, and we come in here and we land somewhere in here. Okay, classical group, and we do a classical rendition of whether it's a spiritual, a gospel song, or a CCM song, maybe. Now, what I want to be clear on, though, is that if you spent enough time around my house, you would probably hear some of those played. Why? Because they're on the albums that has all the music I've been playing to you on. And I would suggest that this is one area, one good thing. There's not a lot of good things, but one good thing about our modern age and now our song-based music market. We used to have to buy all of our music by the album on CDs, or before that on tapes or on records. But now we can buy it by the song. And so you can edit your playlist, all right? That is one good thing. We can chop some of those out. But at our house, we still play a lot of albums, okay? Might not be on the CD, might be online, but it's still an album. And so you'll get some of those. So I do tolerate some of that, okay? I'm just being open and honest that you're not going to find a great defense coming from me for singing spirituals and gospel songs in a hyped up manner. Okay? I don't think it would be consistent with what I've been teaching. So, maybe you think, I'm going to give, open it up in a little bit for questions, and you can feel free to ask whatever you like. I won't promise I have answers. But maybe you think I've gone way too far, especially in the last session with scooping voice and sliding some of those things. Maybe you think I've gone way too far. Let me just share a few things. First of all, I'll just remind you that style of singing is influenced from over here. And it may be true that you can listen to mild forms of it and it not be sinful. Okay? I'm not saying that as soon as it has the slightest hint over here, it's sinful. But here's how I'd like you to think about it. Let's suppose you're sitting at a cafe and you have 2 cups of beverage served to you. The first one is, it's extremely healthy, maybe it's a smoothie type of beverage. I mean, it's probably got spinach blended into it. It's probably, it's got Flav City protein powder in it, maybe. It's got it's at least Bobby approved, whatever the case, all right? Some of you know what I'm talking about. Healthy, and it's very, very good, okay? If you just had that drink, and you maybe the first sip, you wouldn't think so, but you give it a little time, and you would like it very much, okay? But you're also given another one over here, and maybe this is something, I mean, it's got, it's something coffee probably. Not that coffee in itself is bad for you, but maybe it's a latte. I like lattes. And we've got all the, you know, high fructose corn syrup and sugar you can imagine in that thing. But not only that, down in the bottom of the cup, we got a shot of outright poison that could kill you. All right? I'm just, imagine. And on up through the cup, it's like this continuendum. There's all-out poison down here that could kill you, but it's lesser and lesser as we come to the top. And when we get into the froth, it's all frothed up on top. The froth on top is pretty much completely safe. The way it seems most people treat music is we have these 2 cups. I really, really would like this one. I know it's instantly gratifying, but I know there's poison in the bottom. So what I'm going to do is pull my straw up or put my lips on that cup, and we're just going to the froth off the top. Sip, 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 until the froth is mostly gone. And then there's got to be more to this than that. I mean, it wasn't fully satisfying, so we stick our straw in there or our spoon, and we stir it up, and we try to get a little more froth up to the top, and we manage to do that, and we're shopping for more music, and we manage to dig some up that's, okay, we got some more froth, we sip that off the top, and every once in a while, we sip just a little too much, and we get a little bit of a bellyache, but ooh, that was close, but, you know, we get back on the right track. You get what I'm talking about? I see this happening all the time. Well, I'm just, you tell me, but to me, that's a miserable way to spend your time at a cafe, and it's certainly a miserable way to spend life with music. The thing to do is to take this cup, set it aside, we might not be able to get it out of entirely. The music's all around us. But we can put it out of mind, and we can embrace this cup and say, you know what? I'm going to enjoy this. And you know what? It doesn't happen right away, but after a bit, it's really good. Does that make sense? Just simply developing taste. And it's not near as hard as we make it. Well, how do we do that? What if we're into the wrong music, big time, or even just a little? What do we need to do? Well, we need to do just that. Stop listening to it and replace it. Don't forget to replace it with better music. Try Altar of Praise, okay? I said it's very palatable. If you see you need a big change, or even if you don't need a big change, this would really be healthy for anyone, even myself. Try going on a music fast. 30 days, I do this as a regular way of life, so I'd have to go longer than 30 days. 30 days, no listening to music, period. None. Avoid going places where you know there'll be music playing. Avoid going shopping. Avoid, I know we can't crawl into a box. I know that. We're all in different stages of life. Wherever you're a busy mother, whatever, you got to do what you got to do. But as best you can, avoid all music for 30 days or longer. And then after you've avoided it, pick up something that's very palatable. Something like Altar of Praise or Hymns of the Church with the Oasis Chorale. And don't listen to the whole CD. Just listen to a little bit of it. Put it away. And maybe 2 days later, listen to it some more. Being very careful not to listen to what you may have before. And little by little, start listening to more and more of that kind of music. You're going to have to be really committed, okay, if it's going to work. But ultimately, I think you would find it that you will start feeling very refreshed. And you will find it not only enjoyable, but very satisfying. In conclusion, I started these sessions with three goals. Number one, to show the communicative and spiritual power of music, how it changes individuals, churches, and society. Two, to help us discern what music is fitting and helpful for our churches, homes, and everyday life. And three, to give you information that you can use to build personal convictions concerning music. I hope I've at least headed in the direction of those goals. Now, sometimes I get this. Jesse, you make this whole music thing so complicated. And if that's what you're feeling like, I've made it complicated, I'm very sorry. Because it is not my intention at all to make it this thing complicated. I realized that there was times as we went through these sessions that I used knowingly or unknowingly some musical terms or things that maybe you didn't understand. Or maybe I talked about rhythmic theory and things and got a bit technical at times. I didn't actually expect everybody to follow me all the way through all those things, okay? Or maybe in all the history you thought, well, you know, we got to know all this to be able to discern music. No. I was doing all this to boil down to some very few and what I hope you find simple points. First of all, building the case for traditional classical style versus popular in a very broad sense. And over again, I've reminded us of the two major problems with popular music. Can anyone tell me what both or one of those are, the two major problems with pop music? Just spit it out. Well, That's good. That's good. That's kind of a whole mixture of this thing. You are correct. But there's two. They're both very much in sync with improvisation, but two things. Identifiable. Improvisation might be a little hard for us to, let's just listen to music and identify, but what are some identifiable things?
Sensual.
Can you fill that one out a little bit? Polyrhythms is one. Yep. Sensual vocal and instrumental vocal techniques. Thank you. If we can, and it all has to do with improvising, Brian. You're dead on correct. If we can just remember those two basic elements, okay? And hopefully with all the, whether it seemed complicated or not, that we went through, you have a sense of what I'm talking about by the sensual techniques and why they're sensual and the rhythm. It's my prayer that this would not have to be a complicated thing. And I hope that going from here forward, it's more clear than it ever has been. My conclusion is this, that good music equals sacred music of the classical style. Church music, Christian lyrics, with music that, remember, this is very broad, okay? But we don't have pop elements. Is that fair? Am I reasonable? I hope so.